Hello and welcome to QSO. It's all about ham radio. And today, our special guest is Fred Lloyd, AA7BQ. He's the founder and publisher of QRZ.com. And Fred's got some interesting stories to tell. And the story of the beginning of QRZ and his career in IT, his brief career in radio, and some real interesting stuff. Also, we have Cliff, K4VAH, tells a story about his meeting Barry Goldwater back a few years ago, and it's an interesting story to hear. Also, congratulations to Tim Smith, KG6ASY. Tim is the winner of the Trans World Antenna TW2010L Backpacker with the Quadra Stand and Carry Bag. He won that for him and his group. From the field day episode that we had, 12 hours of broadcasting on field day. And we had so much fun and really, really enjoyed it. So Tim Smith, KG6ASY, the winner of the Trans World Antennas TW2010L Backpacker. And, of course, that made field day a real special event and helped encourage folks to participate in the possibility of winning that antenna from Trans World. And it is a technological piece of work. I'm sure they're really going to enjoy it. Well, we'll get things underway right after this on QSO. It operates 20 through 10 meters. It's stealth. It will keep up with any three-element beam and any vertical that you have on your property. But if you can't have a three-element beam or a vertical on your property, you can still have a TW2010. It is stealth. It disappears. We tried to take pictures of it, and we had to move the thing around because it hides so well. There is no compromise in performance with this antenna, and it's portable. You can take it with you on vacation. It's quite unique. They make several flavors of this antenna, however. If you want to operate 80, 40, 60, 30-meter band, it's all there. Go to their website and check it out, transworldantennas.com. That's transworldantennas.com, and check out the special pricing right now. Are you needing a place to put up a website? Have you looked around? Do you want to do something that's easy, that's simple, and very, very inexpensive, but yet looks professional? Are you having troubles with your computer? Do you need some tech support help? Are you tired of being connected to India every time you pick up the telephone to get some help on a machine or on a website? The people to call is tux-support.com. That's tux-support.com. T-U-X, like tuxedo, dash support, the word support, .com. These are the people to call. They can get you going. It won't cost you an arm and a leg. You can afford to work with these folks. They're professionals. They answer in plain English, and they can help you do things from a very, very basic, simple standpoint. If you have something that you want to do that's a complex project, well, they can handle that as well. But if you're like I am, when you're trying to put something up on the web or you need help with a computer, you really want somebody that speaks English. And you want it to be simple, and you don't want to have to pay an arm and a leg for it. And you want to deal with some good folks. Go to their website, tux-support.com. That's tux-support.com. Here at QSO, we've got something new, and that's a prize closet. And we are in the process of filling that prize closet up. And we're going to be telling you on the air some of the items that we've got in the prize closet. If you'd like to win some of these things, we'd love to see you do that. But what you've got to do is send us an email. Go up to the website, tedrandall.com or qsoradioshow.com. And when you go to that website, just simply send us an email. Say hello, tell us where you're listening, how the signal's coming in. If you're listening by podcast, tell us how you have joined this radio show. And then put a little note in there that says, I want to win. And we'll put your name in the hat, and we will have a drawing twice a month and we're going to be giving away what's in our prize closet. Now, I can't tell you everything that's in there so far, but we'll be posting those items up on the website, and we'll be telling you about them on the air, but don't miss out. Send us an email and put in that email, I want to win, and let's see who the lucky winners will be. Our guest today is Fred Lloyd, AA7BQ. He is the founder and the originator and publisher of QRZ. Hello, Fred.
Hello. How's it going?
I'm doing pretty good today here. We got, you know what's funny? Before we start doing these radio interviews, we get to talking on the telephone, and I get to thinking to myself, we got to stop this because he's telling a good story here, and we're going to miss the story. But we got to talking about equipment malfunctioning, and I had a little problem here with a telephone hybrid, and he was telling me that he had done some record spinning using remote lines years ago, and had just started telling me a story about a radio station down in Florida. So I'm going to ask you to just pick up right where you left off, because this was getting pretty good.
Well, okay, Ted. Thanks for having me on the show. We're just going down memory lane there and talking about radio. I actually got a job in broadcasting back when I was 19, maybe 20 years old. And that's because over the summer I had played around and got a first-class FCC license. And there was a little 1,000-watt AM station in St. Petersburg, Florida that needed someone that they could have on staff, because it was required back then to have at least one licensed individual on staff, and so I got the job. And most of my duties were to read the plate current and the RF current every day and put them in the log and watch the modulation. And then once a month, I think it's been a while, I would drive around town and do field strength measurements. It was all great fun. I felt like I was really getting into the big time of broadcasting. The job didn't last all that long. I think I was there 3 or 4 months. And, I moved on to other things. But it was great. I got a press pass, I remember, at the time. And the nice thing about that was it got me in backstage at several concerts at the time. And so, I really enjoyed that part, being only 20 years old.
Yeah, at that time, it transitioned. It went from a point where they had full-time engineers and separate disc jockeys, and of course then what happened was they lost the full-time engineering position, and they wanted the disc jockeys to have first-class FCC licenses in order to be able to sit there and take meter readings on a directional. And so, consequently, at that point, we had a lot of combo guys. We had a lot of guys that had first phones and would be DJs at the same time. But what happened was is that it spurred a whole industry of schools at that time. There was places like, I think it was Elkins. Do you remember that? Does that name ring a bell?
It doesn't. They're not for me, no.
But Elkins was one of the schools that they would take you in, and they would literally drill the second class questions into your head and answers. And when you completed that class, you could go down and take the test. And it was kind of funny because some of the guys that took the test, they couldn't identify the difference between a resistor or a capacitor, but they had passed that second class license. And that got them the ticket. Of course, they had to get the first, I think, at that point. The jump between the second and the first, I don't think was that pronounced. The second one was the second class was the tough one, from ground zero. And they had to have that ticket. So they'd take that crash course, and the next thing you know, they were sitting in the DJ chair, but they were able to take meter readings. And that's what the business was all about back then. It was a little different. But
yeah.
I remember when there were engineers. They had guys sitting there all day long, watching the transmitter, literally, I often wondered, well, what would be the worst case scenario? I think it would drift off frequency, it would interfere with some other station, and they'd be made to shut it off. But that was back then. It was real serious. And matter of fact, during the days of the full-time engineers, the announcers came to work in jackets and ties, And they were talking into Altec ribbon microphones. Oh, me, I'm too old. What do you think?
Yeah, well, another famous one was, of course, the Gates Yard Console. And, you know, I'm sure you remember the reason it was called a yard was because it was 3 foot wide.
Yeah, those were very popular, and there was a lot of small FM stations that went on the air that were that used the yard. And the yard, it was available in stereo. It was stereo and mono, but a couple of the stations I worked at had yards, and they were just the mono versions. But had a pretty good-sized meter on the right-hand side, and it was a real short console. It was not very tall. And to contrast, if you remember, some of the ones that Gates put out were huge, and they had great big gigantic pots on them. They are the knobs on the Davin wire wound potentiometers, and they had different colored little things on. They were big, huge consoles, big, huge meters. When you sat down in back of one of those things, you kind of felt like you were driving a 57 Buick or something. They were big. Well, you know, did you have an interest in, at that time, were you interested in amateur radio at all, or were you, how did that come about?
I was interested in it. I got into CB radio when I was about 15, and I envied the ham radio guys because they had, of course, much bigger radios with a lot of power, and the band conditions were good back then. And I actually bought a big Helicrafter set, one of the old SX series, the transmitter, receiver, and kilowatt amplifier, but then didn't get the license and didn't put it on the air. I sort of really failed there, but it was at the time it was the Morse code that slowed me down, and so I didn't do much else with it until I'd say about 15 years later. Or more, maybe 20 years later, when I was living in California in the Bay Area and hanging around ham radio outlet store there in my time off, during the lunch hour. I was working in high tech at computer companies. And in my time off, I'd go down to HRO and browse around. And finally, I decided, okay, this is it. I'm not going to be beaten by this. And so I sat down and started learning the code. And, very shortly thereafter, got my first license. I was N6UFT, which was, let me see if I can recall, I believe that was a technician class license. And then shortly after that, within a month, I upgraded to advanced class, and I was KJ6RK, and... a month or so after that, on a dare, I was at the Ham Fest at Sunnyvale. Someone dared me to take the test, and so I went and I read the license study guide while I was standing in line, went inside, passed the written, and missed the code by one letter. And so I came back a couple of weeks later and made my extra class license. So I always felt good about the fact that once I really applied myself to it and I made it up to 20 words a minute, I got all that done in about 60 days. So ever since then, I've been a ham, and that was in 1987.
Well, you know, I think a lot of it is focus. A lot of it is being able to focus. And unfortunately, in a lot of folks' lives, between work and all their other responsibilities, they just don't have the time to focus on it, you know. And if you can focus, it's really not that difficult. If you can spend the time, if you're able to spend a couple hours a day or even an hour a day, you know, at it, it's people are amazed. The folks I've talked to in the past were amazed at if they had the time and they could spend the time even with the code, how quickly the code would come. But then a lot of times, if you're left to yourself and there's no one there to kind of teach you or help you along a little bit, It's a little different, because back in those days, you know, we didn't have all the Gordon West CDs and all the other things that people have today. There weren't people around like Ham Test Online and things like that can help coach you through it. You had to get it out of a book, and sometimes there wasn't even an Elmer around. You kind of had to get it on your own. And I think a lot of folks got discouraged. Let me ask you this. You got started in CB radio, and there's a lot of guys that came up through Citizens Band. I'm curious as to what equipment were you working with when you were in Citizens Band?
At the time, it was basically tube radios that had crystals, individual separate crystals that you would buy down at Radio Shack for each channel. I remember brand names like Lafayette, I think. I can't even remember. It's amazing how quickly 30 or 40 years go by.
Well, the only reason I ask is because so many guys have come up that way. And I get into discussions with people, and I'll mention old Citizens Band brand names, and they go, "Oh yeah, I had one of those. Oh, my favorite radio was." Well, see, I grew up in the Detroit area, and there was a company up there by the name of Multi Elmac, who also had made amateur gear, and they made some really cool AM mobile AM receivers and transmitters. But they put out a Citizens Band radio called the Citiphone SS. And it was a 23 channel, and I think the SS had something to do with the fact it was one of the very first synthesized radios, because everything else had been rock bound. And then somebody discovered how they could pair crystals up into a synthesizer arrangement, and they could put more than one crystal together at the same time. I don't quite understand how that all worked, but nonetheless. And there was companies like you said, Lafayette. They had. Good Lord, they had the Telstats and Comstat 25s and all these tube radios. And sometimes they're just fun to talk about. Now, the ones everybody wanted to own were radios like the Tram Titan and the Browning Eagle. Those were the – and I remember those guys who would – they had little boxes they'd connect the microphone up to. And when they'd key the mic, it would it'd make it ping because the – the Brownings had this thing where the receiver stayed on for nanoseconds once you keyed the mic, and it would feedback just slightly and make this pinging sound, which I was always wonder what the function of that was, but I think it was just a kind of a trademark thing. But there's little toys you could get back then. There was the Demco power modulator. I don't know if you ever saw one of those things. It was a horrifying thing. You you plugged your D104 into that, and then plugged that to the input of the mic, and it had a preamp, and it went into clipping and put out square waves. I guess I don't know, but there was those and a little compressor amplifier called a Vibratrol. And we won't even talk about the DNA company, the guys that made all the sweep tube linear amplifiers. But anyhow, I just didn't know if you recalled some of the radios you may have owned or some of the antennas you used.
Well, I don't recall that much about it. I do recall how impressed I was the first time I saw someone operating mobile, and it kind of blew me away because he had an old tube radio. It may have been a Drake or something like that, or a Galaxy, in his car, and. He demonstrated for me that, he would rev the engine up and get those tubes glowing bright, and he made a 20-meter contact across the country, and I was blown away by that. I couldn't believe how fantastic that was. But the thing that gets me the most is the fact that back then, two-way radio was really something. It was, only the elite people could talk on two-way radio. It wasn't something that was really within the reach of the average person until CB came along, and then it wasn't really in the reach of people, that is, global or intercontinental communications, unless you became a ham. Today, however, two-way radios, people are brought up with them, and, the cell phone really has killed the mystique of talking wirelessly, and, it's pretty nostalgic to look back at the days where people were really blown away by ham radio. It's kind of sad in a way, and we really have to keep trying to make the hobby interesting. And sort of plugging myself, that's one of the things I do with QRZ, is do things to keep the hobby interesting in today's context.
Well, I'll tell you something. The reason why I'm asking the questions about Citizens Band and all that is just so many guys got into ham radio because of Citizens Band. And, of course, Citizens Band was under a lot of fire, a lot of criticism, and You know, a lot of the hams acted like they just absolutely hated it, you know. And it did produce some problems. There was a lot of pirating and renegading and all that kind of thing. But I look back on it, and I think Citizens Band was one of the best things that could have ever happened to amateur radio, because it got people in front of some kind of a rig. It put a microphone in their hands, and the ones that were serious about it could see the limitations, and they could also see what amateur radio had to offer was so much more. I mean, it was incredible what amateur radio offered compared to Citizens Band. But Citizens Band whet the appetite of the real serious guy, and the next thing you know, he's got a ham license. It's interesting. I can go back now, and I can look up some of the fellas I used to know back when I was real young. I was probably 12 or 13, and every one of those guys have wound up with ham licenses, you know, because they found that the Citizens Band was just very limiting. And but you're right in that, you know, cell phone technology now, when you talk to someone and say, well, you ought to get a ham license. And they'll say, what do I need that for? I can pick up my cell phone. I can call Hong Kong. You know, they kind of equate it to that. You know, but I still think the true experimenter, the person who really has an inquisitive mind is going to be attracted into the hobby, providing they get exposed to it. And I think exposure is probably one of the biggest, I guess I want to say, catalysts to get somebody into ham radio. And that's where QRZ comes in, because it's an exposure tool. It's there on the internet. And I wonder how many non-amateur people, how many non-hams, people who are not even prospective hams, stumble across the site and discover the hobby by means of QRZ.
Well, I think, the search engines like Google, for example, contribute to that. There's been a lot of people that are found on QRZ because simply they Googled for a person's name and then it showed up in that manner. I can't tell you how many people have used our online test, but I know it's several thousand people have used our online practice tests in order to obtain their initial license. It's one of those things that, QRZ has been around for almost 16 years now, and there are people that did not know ham radio before QRZ existed. In other words, all they know about ham radio started with QRZ. I mean, there are people that have by now been hams for more than 10 years, and the QRZ to them has always been there. So I'm really happy to have done that, you know, for the hobby. I never intended to start QRZ as a, you know, what it ended up being is not what my original intent was. My original intent was born out of my own desire to simply get a copy of the database in a computer. My main hobby was always computers, and I wanted to see what it would be like to get the database going, and it simply morphed into what it is today. And so, you know, I really can't claim, you know, I really don't tell people that, you know, I'm not the Al Gore of ham radio. You know, I didn't invent it, but it was just necessity being the mother of invention. I got lucky and put together a website that now is close to being one of the most popular there are or that exists for ham radio.
All right, let me just tell you what I know. I had a little checking on that, okay? And there may be some folks that aren't going to be happy with what I'm about to say, but on several of the internet rating services, of all of the amateur radio websites that I put in, and I put in every website I could think of, QRZ has almost three times the traffic of the rest of the pack. So it's a well-deserved numbers. And I mean, I looked at that and I was very impressed. I thought, this is really cool, because one thing I like about the website is you've not incorporated a lot of things that make it difficult to load. So even someone with a low power computer and they don't necessarily have the fastest connection, they can still log in and they can still read the posts and the articles. They can see the ads. They can look up call signs. And the man that's got, he's got cable access or fiber running into the house. You know, he's in fine shape too. But everybody can view the site, and it loads quickly and easily without a whole lot of, you go into some of these sites and you're sitting there waiting for all this flash to load, and you're there for a little while. And I can't even imagine being on dial-up, but there's folks that are still doing dial-up. So with all that considered, now let me say this. I have gone, this is one of the things I like about the site is, believe it or not, I like the ads. Now, a lot of people say, I'm sure will say, well, I get these ads. But, it's so cool because you see something pop up on QRZ and it catches your eye. And you say, huh, what about that? You click it and you know what? Now you've learned something. You've got a whole new perspective of something. You've learned information about a brand new product, something that somebody's just put out. And I think that's completely, totally valuable. It reminds me of the days when we used to grab the magazines, even the handbooks, and stare at those ads for hours. Kind of like, I don't know if you ever got the old Lafayette, Radio Shack, and Olson catalogs, And the people that tend to be on your site as advertisers are unique, at least in my book they are. When I click on them, I usually find something out new, as I see a company I've never seen before. And I just find that real interesting. To me, I think that's valuable to a ham. It's to say nothing of being able to look up call signs. And I notice now almost everybody I know, when they're on the air and they're operating, they've got their computer on and they're on QRZ punching in the call sign of the next person that they're talking to. And it isn't that they're checking them out. It's just that it's interesting to find out. It's interesting to see on the map where they are. And a lot of those folks have put pictures up and they have links to their website. It's a whole different world. It's not like it used to be. You talk to someone somewhere and it remained a total mystery. I mean, even the geography of the area they were in, you had to look it up in Encyclopedia Britannica. Now, all you had to do is punt their call letters in QRZ and hit the Google map, and you can see where they are, and you can find out all kinds of cool things about who you're talking to. Well, you say this thing morphed. It wasn't something that, you started off with one thing, and it kind of took on a life of its own. What was the very first beginnings of QRZ? Tell me a little bit about how it all went together. We'll be right back with our special guest, Fred Lloyd, AA7BQ. The founder and publisher of QRZ.com, right after this. In this day and time, what we don't have much of is time. And if you enjoy operating and you just don't get a chance to, you need to take a look at the Trans World Antennas, TW2010, and all the models that operate the different bands. Go to YouTube and put in Trans World Antennas and see how simple this thing is to set up. I mean, it is easy. It goes together fast. And, of course, that gives you more time to operate. You're not fussing around with an antenna. In an emergency situation, it is absolutely necessary. You need to have one of these. If not for yourself, for your club, or whoever it is that may get called out on a scene where you've got to operate and you've got to be able to set up quickly and efficiently. Go to their website, and that's transworldantennas.com, transworldantennas.com. There's a link up there to YouTube, and you can see how quickly this antenna sets up, how easy it is to operate. transworldantennas.com.
Since the beginning of time and across the history of radio broadcasting, there's only one radio station that has ever earned a full-length documentary dedicated totally and completely to its rise to a pinnacle never before achieved by any radio station, and its fall. This is a story of what happened when the most legendary programming genius of all time takes the reins of an obscure Canadian radio station in the small city of Windsor, Canada, and creates a radio legend that rocked the Motor City, the USA, and half a continent.
That does it for Big Tom Rivers, 1971. And Hank O'Neill starts a brand new year next at CKLW. For the last time this year, I will say to you, rock on, mother!
Ladies and gentlemen, the beat goes on.
CKLW, the Motor City.
2020 news guys, they were disc jockeys without music. Bum, bum, bum. And everybody knew that something was going to happen. You knew something was going to happen.
Motor City Mayor Roman Gribbs has a mad on for an unidentified rapist, a butcher knife-wielding pervert, cornered a secretary in the elevator at Detroit City County Building, and rode her to the vacant seventh floor and proceeded to sexually assault her. Guards are now being considered for future surveillance of the crime-stained seventh floor. Lee Marshall, 2020 News.
Now, Markham Street Productions takes you there as you relive the rise and fall of
the Big HCKLW, the Motor City.
You can now own your own copy of this new DVD documentary, Radio Revolution, the rise and fall of the Big 8 from Markham Street Productions. The special edition DVD of this award-winning feature-length documentary includes extra scenes, outtakes, photos, and special features. Radio Revolution, the rise and fall of the Big 8 is now available for only $29.95 plus shipping. Go to RadioRevolutionDVD.com. That's RadioRevolutionDVD.com. Order now while supply lasts. RadioRevolutionDVD.com. That's RadioRevolutionDVD.com.
And the hits just keep on coming.
CKLW.
At QSO, we've got a new prize closet, and we've got some interesting things going into that prize closet. Be sure and write us and send us that email that says, I want to win. Put that in the text somewhere in that email and go to our website, QSOradioshow.com. That's QSOradioshow.com, and send us an email. Tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're listening, how the signal's coming in, or if you're listening by podcast. But be sure and put on that email, I want to win, because we're going to have some really, really neat things to give away. We'll be putting those things up on the website and telling you more about them on the air. Be sure and don't miss out. Send us an email and put in there, I want to win. Go to QSOradioshow.com. That's QSOradioshow.com or TedRandall.com, RANDALL, and we'll look for your email. And now, ladies and gentlemen, back to our special guest, Fred Lloyd, AA7BQ, the founder and publisher of QRZ.com.
Well, QRZ started by when I was working at Sun Microsystems, actually, back in the late 80s, I was hanging around in my spare time on the internet, and there were things which still exist today. They're called news groups on the internet, and there was specifically a ham radio group that I used to hang out and read articles, and I learned from reading in that group that, which was text only, that a person could actually purchase the database from the FCC by going through this procedure, the process from the, I think, what was it called, National Technical Information Service, NTIS, and you could order the tape, and so people were talking about that, but there was a barrier there, and the tape, and that was the price. The tape was somewhere between $600 and $800 to get a copy of the tape from the government, and so I thought, well, what if I get a copy of the tape and make copies of it and sell it to all of anybody who else is reading this group, and we could therefore split the cost and it might get affordable. And so I got a copy of the tape. It was about, like I say, $600 or $800. I can't remember now. And it was on half-inch reel-to-reel tape. It was a huge tape. But luckily, I worked in a facility where we had tape drives for that, and so I transferred that to a quarter-inch tape, and then I put out an ad on the Usenet and told everybody, send me your quarter-inch empty cartridges and $20, and I'll make you a copy. And so right away, we recouped the cost of that. I think I sold 40 or 50 copies, and that was a success. So I didn't think much about it. I enjoyed having my copy of the database, and so did a lot of other people. 6 months went by, and it was time for an update. And I had come to the conclusion that copying tapes in my bedroom at home wasn't a lot of fun. So I thought, well, maybe we could use a CD. You know, it was a really new medium at the time. Not a lot of people had CD-ROM drives, but I thought, you know, it still made a lot of sense to me. I had previously worked in an optical disc company, and so I had a lot of fascination with that. And I found a publisher that was selling CDs that were stuffed with shareware. And so I thought, well, you know, the database is only about 60 megabytes. And I know a CD-ROM holds a lot more than that. In fact, they hold about 650 megabytes. So I called them and I asked them, or wrote them, and I said, what do you think? Do you have space on one of your shareware CDs for a copy of this database? And they got back to me and said, you know, why don't we just do a ham radio CD? And I said, okay, well, that sounds great. So now I was in a panic because I had 60 megabytes of data and 600 megabytes of space, and I felt like, you know, I had to somehow fill that disk. So I went and gathered all of the ham radio articles I could find, anything I could find about ham radio, and put it all onto a CD and sent it to them. And they had me sign a little contract that said that they would pay me royalties and all, and that was fine. And I ordered 100 copies for myself, and they came, and I sold those the same way I sold the original tapes on Usenet, $20 a piece, and sold all 100 and thought, well, that's okay, that's nice, and didn't hear much about it after that. A few months later, maybe 2 months later, I was getting ready to go on vacation, and I thought, well, you know, those publishers said they were going to pay me a royalty, and I called them up, and they told me, well, oh, we're sorry, we forgot to put you in our accounting system. We'll take care of that. And, okay, that's fine. I went on vacation, and when I got home a few weeks later, there was a check waiting for me in the mailbox, and I just about fell over. I mean, it was a few thousand dollars, and suddenly I thought, you know, there might be a future in this business. And so I immediately started working on version 2 of the CD, and around the same time I started up a dial-up bulletin board in Scottsdale, Arizona, and put the database on that. Had several hundred users that were really happy about that. So the CDs were starting to sell through the regular CD channels pretty well. And since I was in the high-tech industry and had access to the Internet, I found a local Internet service provider that was selling dial-up Internet in the early 90s. And then I guess it was the mid-90s by then, 95. And they agreed to let me put QRZ on the Internet on a server that I owned. And that's how QRZ got started. It was really, really, really simple in the beginning.
Well, I guess the thing is that, I remember years ago, the only thing we had was the call book. And you got that like once a year. And a lot of times, hams couldn't even afford to buy the call book once a year. They'd have, you know, a call book from 2 years ago. And, when you think about the drastic difference of owning a call book as opposed to being able to log in on a computer, that's really astounding. And, of course, it's so easy to navigate because everybody knows the FCC site is so convoluted. You can find something if you've got the time to really dig it out. And I don't know. I always dread having to go up to the FCC site if I'm actually really looking for something. Sometimes I'm better off on Google and just leave the FCC site alone. But, all right. Now, while you were doing this, Did you ever think at that point, you know, when you first started this, did you ever think that this thing would grow to the point where it is now?
Well, no, not really. You know, it really didn't hit me until about 7 years later when I was on vacation. This was in the late 90s. I was on vacation, and my wife and I were in the South Pacific. And I was still working for the computer company, and I took along a little shortwave radio with me, a little Sony Yacht Boy, and I'm sitting on a beach thousands and thousands of miles from anywhere, and I heard some hams talking on 20 meters, and one of them was on a ship and down around South America, and you know, I listened to them talk, and finally one of them said, "Well, you can check me out on QRZ.com." And at that moment, I thought, "Oh my God, this thing really has hit." So that's about how long it took me to realize that it was really a kind of a global phenomenon, and I just couldn't believe that, you know, anywhere on the planet, you know, QRZ was not only available but widely in use.
Well, I guess I don't know if you've thought about this, but if you go back a number of years and compare to today, you have field day locations that the guys have their notebooks right there beside the field day station, and they're doing their logging, and they've got wireless internet or internet by some means, and they're on QRZ looking up call signs as they go down the log. You know, we just did our field day broadcast, and I talked to a number of stations across the country. They're all logged into QRZ during field day. So I think that's really marvelous, and I think it really speaks volumes for how the technology has developed over the years. And now, even though QRZ you would consider to be a pretty basic website and database, if we go back just a few years, it was like, you know, light years ahead of anything else that was out there. And now, of course, it's become staple. In other words, it's, you know, it's ingrained into the amateur radio fabric. It's as much a part of the amateur radio landscape as any other traditional organization that we have. That's just all there is to it. Everybody uses QRZ. Well, your background is computers, obviously, and you're talking about it was your original hobby. Tell me, what do you think? Where are we going with this? I hear guys talk about, you know, Echolink and IRLP, and they say, "Oh, it's not amateur radio. I don't want a computer in my shack." But I think it's obvious the handwriting is not just on the wall. The handwriting is flashing on and off in neon that the computer and IT is going to be a key portion, if not the future of amateur radio. And I'm curious, what do you see coming down the pike?
Well, I think digital technology is making things available to us that not necessarily the internet, but things such as digital signal processing and advanced communications modes. These things are all making quite a difference. I mean, you can conduct, for example, communications now in conditions where before it wasn't possible. Advanced coding techniques, digital modes, things of that nature, digital radio, digital HF. It's still a hobby where, you know, electronics and communications enthusiasts are going to be attracted, you know, for the most part. It will continue to be difficult, really, to get appliance operating Game Boy type people interested in. In other words, today, you know, you offer a teenager an Xbox 360 and a high def TV. Or you offer him, you know, a ICOM 7800 HF set. Which one do you think he's going to pick, right? there's just, it's really difficult to get people interested in that sort of a thing. Certainly our equipment is going to get better and better, and for those of us that appreciate it, it just keeps getting better all the time. We can hope that the bands will, the sunspot cycle will improve to our favor here in the near future, or at least in our lifetime. But, I really don't know where the hobby is going. The outlook does not, to me, look all that great, to tell you the truth, because our average demographic is pretty old right now, and there's not a lot of signs of it getting younger. The attraction is not the same, as we discussed early on. You know, back in the day when two-way radio was really something, it was a lot easier to attract people than it is today.
Well, I know that there is WinLink and there is D-Star, and recently I was in a conversation with several people, and we were kicking this around, and I'll just do it over the radio and throw it out in front of you. We'll be right back with our special guest, Fred Lloyd, AA7BQ, the founder and publisher of QRZ.com, right after this. It operates 20 through 10 meters. It's stealth. It will keep up with any three-element beam and any vertical that you have on your property. But if you can't have a three-element beam or a vertical on your property, you can still have a TW2010. It is stealth. It disappears. We tried to take pictures of it, and we had to move the thing around because it hides so well. There is no compromise in performance with this antenna. And it's portable. You can take it with you on vacation. It's quite unique. They make several flavors of this antenna, however. If you want to operate 80, 40, 60, 30-meter band, it's all there. Go to their website and check it out, transworldantennas.com. That's transworldantennas.com. And check out the special pricing right now. Here at QSO, we've got something new. And that's a prize closet. And we are in the process of filling that prize closet up. And we're going to be telling you on the air some of the items that we've got in the prize closet. If you'd like to win some of these things, we'd love to see you do that. But what you've got to do is send us an email. Go up to the website, tedrandall.com or qsoradioshow.com. And when you go to that website, just simply send us an email. Say hello, tell us where you're listening, how the signal's coming in. If you're listening by podcast, tell us how you have joined this radio show. And then put a little note in there that says, I want to win. And we'll put your name in the hat, and we will have a drawing twice a month, and we're going to be giving away what's in our prize closet. Now, I can't tell you everything that's in there so far, but we'll be posting those items up on the website, and we'll be telling you about them on the air, but don't miss out. Send us an email and put in that email, I want to win. And let's see who the lucky winners will be. And now, ladies and gentlemen, back to our special guest, Fred Lloyd, AA7BQ, the founder and publisher of QRZ.com. What if there was a way to create an intranet that would duplicate the capabilities of the internet, but it would be connected by means of RF. In other words, you would have no dependency on a cable connection, a DSL connection, or any sort of traditional internet wireless connection. In other words, this intranet, or maybe if you want to call it a clone of the internet, would be completely carried by amateurs, and it would be accessible by means of RF. Now, I was thinking about this. Now, this is way out there. But everything we've ever done in amateur radio has been way out there. The other thing, I mean, that's just an idea to kick around. But and I know there's D-Star and WinLink, and I don't know how all that would fit in, and I know they're opposing crowds and all that sort of thing. The other thing is that when you look at a Game Boy and you look at I guess maybe Game Boys, or I don't know, some of this stuff, the technology I'm not familiar with. What's the little, the handheld things that they used to have? Well, those Game Boys, I don't know. Both of my sons have had those things, and I think those are outdated now. I don't know what's up to date. But anyways, the amount of advertising that goes into these things. In other words, amateur radio has no advertising at all. Nothing. We have nothing. There is no slick television commercials showing some young guy, talking to some real sexy gal on the other side of the world, using an iCommon or a Linko or a Yaesu radio. You don't see that on television. It isn't done, okay? So, in other words, we're really kind of, regardless of what the technology is or how much interest there is in the technology, we don't have the marketing to compete with those kind of things. So in a way, it's kind of an unfair advantage. Of course, although that type of advertising never existed to begin with in ham radio, even in the early days. But we weren't dealing with, areas of the population that we're dealing with now. And I happen to agree with you. I mean, I hear all these people saying, well, it's growing and the hobby is not dying and all that kind of stuff. I really do believe that unless amateurs today take action to make the hobby more interesting, to embrace new technologies and to encourage younger people, I don't think the outlook is going to be all that great. Now, that's my opinion. And I have two sons that are licensed hams, both work in radio engineering. And that's how I see it. Now, you're working with QRZ, and I don't want to get going down a doomsday path. But do you find the average QRZ person to be, what age would you say? Where do they fall in? The person that logs in and does the login thing and checks in regularly, maybe puts a few posts up and that sort of thing. What is the average age of those people?
I would say over 40, and quite a few over 50. It's rare indeed that we have anyone that's that's of the Game Boy age, to be frank about it.
Well, it could it be that there are those that just kind of go unnoticed?
Well, there are a few, but a lot of what goes on in QRZ is we have two real activities on QRZ. We've got the call book, which is number one. It's by and large 90% of what goes on QRZ is simply call book, and then there are the discussion forums, and the discussion forums tend to be very I want to say kind of tough, really. The stereotype of the cranky old guy, is sometimes kind of appropriate on QRZ, and it can be very intimidating for a younger person to want to pipe in a discussion like that, because it's like sort of like talking to your parents almost. It's very tough for them, and so we started a group on QRZ for younger people, but it really hasn't gone anywhere. And I think that's just kind of the nature of the beast.
Well, see, I guess maybe, and this is a good discussion to have, because I raised two sons, and I never shoved amateur radio at them. I never pushed amateur radio on them. And for heaven's sakes, if I sit back and think about it, I can't figure out what it was that really caught their interest, or what it was that really really got
well,
to.
They saw Daddy doing it, right?
Well, yeah, but I mean, in a lot of cases, I mean, look at families. I mean, there's a lot of times the father is interested in golf and the kids hate golf. So what got their attention? I don't know, but I mean, I've got two sons that are fanatics. I've got my older son David, who is chief engineer for Trevecca Nazarene University here in the Nashville area, and he takes care of three radio stations, and he's got antennas up over there at the college, and he's got at the university, I should say, and has radios in there, and you know, getting students interested in the radio broadcast side of what they do there at the university. And, you know, he's, at one time I counted like 8 antennas on his car. I mean, look, going down the road, it was heinous. I mean, it looked horrible. 8 antennas on this thing, you know, and I said, why do you have 8 antennas on your car? Why don't you install a phaser, you know? And but then my younger son is chief engineer for the financial guru, Dave Ramsey, and they're on 400 radio stations, and they're on Fox television and all that. And he's got a Tar Heel, the largest Tar Heel I guess they make, on the back end of his Volvo. And you know, he goes down the road and people look and they roll the windows down and they say, what's that on the back of your car? You know, but I can't put my finger on it. I can't figure out what it is, because I didn't see any trouble at all. I mean, they had an intense interest in this thing without me even prodding. And now that they're licensed, of course, I've lost every radio I ever owned. So there is a risk in getting your kids into this hobby. Whatever you have becomes community property. You know, if they need a microphone, you know, you go up, you go to your ham shack, you sit down, the mic's gone. You know, the speaker's gone. You're missing a soldering iron. You know, an antenna tuner just vanishes for some reason. You know? So there is a risk, and it's a good risk. But, you know, I believe from what I've been able to see firsthand, I don't think it is a problem with younger people not having an interest. I think it's an exposure problem. Somehow, we're just not getting the hobby in front of these kids. And I don't know the answer to that. I really don't. I think that QRZ is a real, real good tool, because it gives them a place to go online. They can actually go there and look at things and see things and all that. And if they do go into the forums and they run into fellows that are, you know, age of their parents, and the guys tend to be, you know, curmudgeons, so to speak. You know, I guess, but that's everywhere in life. I mean, if they had an intense interest in golf, they'd run into the same thing at the golf club, you know, or wherever they go to play golf. They'd run into that same variety of people. So I don't know, but I think we have to be cognizant of this. I mean, we gotta look at this and say, well, how do we develop this out, or how do we gain their interest? And I don't know. I think some of the activities like Field Day and stuff helps a lot, but it still certainly isn't the end all of the answer. But, you know, do you see, I guess I want to say, the development of online stuff? A good example, Chris Matthew did an interview with you, I saw somewhere, that you had talked to him, and he's doing a Facebook kind of amateur radio Facebook thing. Then he produces some videos every week. I think those kinds of activities are going to be an asset to the hobby and help get younger folks, pull younger folks in. But at one point in time, you know, we were younger folks. So I guess my question is, you know, there's always been other things other than ham radio. What was it that pulled us into it? Now, you said when you saw the man operate mobile 20 meters out of the car that really got your attention. And I guess my question is what do we have today that's the equivalent to that? What do you think that would be?
I don't have a good comparison to that. I think maybe Eris, perhaps, you know, talking to the space station. It's very hard, very difficult to say. Young people are so saturated with technology now that it's very hard to impress them. The amateurs used to be amongst the most technologically advanced people in town, you know, in your neighborhood. It's the ham guy that knows everything about electronics and all that. But today, not necessarily the case. We're being bombarded on all sides. I hate to be so negative about it, but I think the tighter that ham radio can interface with the internet and provide something that's unique that's going to be the key, really. You know, the way that certain things ebb and flow in terms of phenomenon, something will catch on, and once that happens, it's hard to contain it. That could happen with ham radio, you know, a phenomenon. A YouTube video, for example, that did something that was, you know, outrageously cool involving ham radio could spur a huge jump in our ranks amongst young people. But it's one of these things about internet phenomenon is that they're not very predictable, and it's very, very hard to create one. They tend to happen on their own, and that's really you know, what we have to wait for. You know, I mean, you know, I will certainly help promote anyone that wants to do something like that. You know, QRZ will certainly throw its weight behind any kind of effort like that. You know, it's going to take some innovation and uniqueness to cause that sensation that's going to push us back into the spotlight.
We'll be right back with our special guest, Fred Lloyd, AA7BQ, the founder and publisher of QRZ.com, right after this. In this day and time, what we don't have much of is time. And if you enjoy operating and you just don't get a chance to, you need to take a look at the Trans World Antennas TW2010 and all the models that operate the different bands. Go to YouTube and put in Trans World Antennas and see how simple this thing is to set up. I mean, it is easy. It goes together fast. And of course, that gives you more time to operate. You're not fussing around with an antenna. In an emergency situation, it is absolutely necessary. You need to have one of these. If not for yourself, for your club, or whoever it is that may get called out on a scene where you've got to operate and you've got to be able to set up quickly and efficiently, go to their website, and that's transworldantennas.com. Transworldantennas.com. There's a link up there to YouTube, and you can see how quickly this antenna sets up, how easy it is to operate. Transworldantennas.com. At QSO, we've got a new prize closet, and we've got some interesting things going into that prize closet. Be sure and write us and send us that email that says, "I want to win." Put that in the text somewhere in that email and go to our website, QSOradioshow.com. That's QSOradioshow.com. And send us an email. Tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're listening, how the signal's coming in, or if you're listening by podcast. But be sure and put on that email, "I want to win," because we're going to have some really, really neat things to give away. We'll be putting those things up on the website and telling you more about them on the air. Be sure and don't miss out. Send us an email and put in there, "I want to win." Go to QSOradioshow.com. That's QSOradioshow.com or TedRandall.com, RANDALL, and we'll look for your email. And now, ladies and gentlemen, back to our special guest, Fred Lloyd, AA7BQ, the founder and publisher of QRZ.com. Well, you know, one thing I did see that was interesting, a little story I'll tell. My son, Matt, was on his way to, I think it was Florida, with a group of guys. And he had his notebook with him in the vehicle. Excuse me. And I think he had a wireless card at the time. He just plugged the wireless card in and logged in wireless through the cell service, and brought up Echolink. And while they were traveling down the road in the car, he with Echolink, we logged into the local computer here in the Nashville area. And I talked to him over the repeater on my HT as I was downtown Nashville while he was traveling in the vehicle. He was talking over Echolink on his notebook. And then when I logged off, he worked some guy in Germany, I guess, and a few other places on some other repeaters. And these guys on the vehicle, they were just amazed. I mean, it was like it just blew them away, you know. And yet I think most of us take Echolink pretty well near for granted. I mean, I don't think we don't use it to really demonstrate what can be done with ham radio. The thing that really got me, I just picked up a copy of one of the magazines. I don't remember which one it was. It was QSD or CQ, but it had to be one of the two. There was an ad for, I think, a new, is it Kenwood? I don't know. That's making a new radio that's got it's got a Cat 5 connection on the back of it so that you can completely control it by the computer. But not just that, it also allows voice over IP operation. And I looked at that and I thought, now there's something really, really cool. Can you imagine being able to take your rig at home and access it by means of a notebook anywhere in the world that you go? And that's one of those kind of things, you know, between Echolink, IRLP, the new data modes. It seems like the younger people I'm talking to are really interested in data modes. And so maybe that's the areas that we ought to be thinking about in terms of highlighting and developing and that sort of thing. And sad to say, I'm really ignorant when it comes to the data modes. My problem's time. I just don't have the time to fool with it. But, boy, the people that get into it, they're really wrapped up in it. Now, are you familiar much with the data modes at all? Or are you familiar with how they operate and which ones are the most popular?
I haven't done a lot of operating there either. I am very impressed by some of the things that, some of the digital modes that they use a lot of error correction and the sound card type of operations. Software like Ham Radio Deluxe, which I find to be very, very impressive in those, in that realm. One of the things that that impresses me recently is one of the new radios that I saw introduced has a USB port on the back now, and I think that is really the key. With USB and direct access to transmit, receive, and both sides of the audio. You plug the radio into your computer and the computer looks at it like a remote sound card. Now we're talking. When we have something going like that, we finally have got an interface to the digital world that's solid. And in fact, it's the new ICOM radio, I believe, that does that. I forget the model number, but it's the one that just came out, in QST. And it's not one of the big ones either. It's one of the lesser expensive ones, 7200 perhaps. But that's the key, I think. And as well as the ones that you mentioned, having the Cat 5 interface. I'm not aware of any of them now that are completely controllable over the Ethernet. But certainly, there's nothing wrong with that. And our future does lie in the digital realm.
Well, I saw an article somewhere where a fellow had taken an ICOM 746 and used the computer cable on it and then used Skype to get the audio going to and from the radio and was operating from his notebook. You know, just about anywhere he went, he could operate his home over the home radio. And of course, if you add a few little whistles and bells to it, you could change antennas and you could do band switching and all that kind of thing. I mean, it could get pretty sophisticated. A person could spend a lot of time doing that. I think that's really cool. The other thing, though, I think one of the things that has hurt our hobby, and I don't want to get into a mudslinging contest here, but one thing that I think just has to go away. And that is all the politics that different organizations and little factions get into. It seems like, in my estimation, from what I'm able to observe, that's gotten much worse as time has gone on. I don't remember it nearly as bad when I was younger. You know, I remember the wars between AM and single sideband. You know, there was quite a conflict, you know, at the beginning of that. But I don't ever remember the politics entering into it. And that's something that I think everybody needs to keep in mind. The politics just needs to go. You know, we don't have any time nor space for that. You know, that's one thing that will absolutely extinguish the hobby. And that's political involvement. You know, I think we need to dump that. The other thing I think that's killing the hobby to some degree, I think we're really over-focused on emergency communications. I mean, I want to do my part, and I think everybody else does. But it's got to the point now, sometimes it's almost like, don't use these frequencies unless it's for an emergency. These radios are for, I mean, people want to have fun with these radios. They want to have fun with their radio. They want to get into this hobby because the hobby is fun. And I think what attracted people into Citizens Band years ago was the fact that there was a little radio community inside the place where you lived. You know, you would get on at night and you would talk to a dozen or more people, a little community. They'd get together. They'd have their coffee breaks and things. It was fun. And there, and even back then, there was an emergency side. I think they had something called React or something like that. These guys were on Channel 9 or whatever, and they had their public service side of things that they did. And amateur radio has really been famous for its public service activities. But I think we have got to the point where we have focused on that so much that we have lost a lot of the fun side of amateur radio. Now, do you think I'm wrong in this?
I times change. That's all I can say. You know, times change, and, the world focuses on different things, and young people are excited by different things. To those of us that have stuck with ham radio all these years, it's still, if not more fun than it ever was. Our number one goal really should be to somehow bring the younger people into the hobby. I really strongly believe that there's no substitute for that. That that's what we have to put our very best effort into.
Well, I came across a situation here, and I may ask you the wrong question. If I ask you the wrong question and it's too political, just. Just change the subject on me here, okay? I'm bad about that. A situation came up here that I was privy to. Actually, two situations that I saw that kind of coming around. And you probably get a lot of that. You probably get some of it on QRZ when you get guys up there in the forums and they're exchanging ideas and whatnot. And that's all good, because I think the exchange of ideas and all that is where things get born. You know, this is where this gives birth to things, because ideas are where everything comes from. But I was driving along, I turned on a 2 meter repeater, and the severe weather was coming into town, or at least it was threatening. It wasn't actually severe as of yet; it was just the contemplation of severe weather. And they had activated this this net, and the net control guy came on, and he went a long time without saying anything. In other words, he activated the net, and they just went away. You know, and we were all just sitting there listening, and pretty soon somebody just pops in with a call sign on the repeater. Well, boy, I'll tell you what, that guy got a butt-chewing. I mean, this guy comes out, he says, there's a weather net going on in here, and I mean, he started just laying into this guy. And I thought, now this is bad. I mean, this is really bad. Why don't you say, there's a weather net in progress. Can you please stand by? I mean, that's all that's necessary, you know. And I'm sure the fellow would have said, sure. And he may have been a little embarrassed that he had thrown his call sign out. But once again, the man had time to turn his radio on and listen for a pretty good portion of time. I would say he could have listened 2 minutes, 3 minutes, and never heard a transmission. Not everybody keys the mic and says, is the repeater in use or is the frequency in use? Some folks, if they don't hear anything for a while, they just throw their call sign out there. And I know I've done it. I don't know how many times, probably too many times to count. Well, this guy took his tongue lashing, and I guess he just went into the standby mode. And I would say it was no more than maybe 10 minutes later. We went through a period of silence on that repeater. It went for a pretty good while. And another gentleman from out of state tossed his call sign in, and boy, he got his, you know what, chewed out as well. And I thought to myself, now this has gone too far. I mean, this is where the emergency side of it has become insane. This is not a good thing. This is not goodwill. This does not promote the hobby. So I shot an email to the fellow, and I just told him, I said, I just don't think that's rude, man. Don't do that. You know, I mean, These people don't have any way of knowing that there's a net in progress. I mean, even if you listen for a few minutes, I mean, it's 2 meters, and 2-meter traffic tends to be really transient. So I got this email back that says, well, I used to do this in some other city, and that's how I did it, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And I thought, well, couldn't we just be nice? You know, couldn't we just be nice? Blind kids were on a repeater here in town from the blind school. And on a sunny day, not a cloud in the sky. And they decided they were going to get on a particular UHF repeater and talk a little bit. And it was just a few minutes. Guy comes on and says, you're going to have to get off of here. The National Weather Service monitors this frequency, and they don't want to listen to this. And I thought...
Yeah, my opinion is that is really baloney. No one owns a frequency. I think, everybody knows that. It's hard to make the case that you're interfering when the airways are dead. The self-importance of some of these operations is what gets to me when, and probably the event that you're talking about was just a sort of a watch, right? People were watching for bad weather. That doesn't mean that you get to own the frequency for the duration of the weather event. It's different if it's a warning. In other words, in weather terms, if there's an actual storm taking place right now, and there's a threat. But just an event like that, I have a real, real hard time, coming on board with the idea that you can't just casually check in. I agree with you 100% that for the guy to be dressed down like that, which amounts to basically a public flogging for something like that, that is rude, and there's no call for it.
Well, I guess my point is that I agree in that emergency communication is imperative for amateur radio. It justifies our existence. But it depends on how far it's going to go. And I mean, if it is that we are there as servants, I mean, I ran into a local law enforcement man here that after we had a major thing happen here, a big fire exploded at a gas main or something. I don't know. But, man, it was flames going in the air forever. And Matt, my son, and I, we drove out to the location. And the man, the law enforcement sheriff at the time, he just turned around and said to me, so, well, are you here to take over and control and tell me what to do? And I wasn't even there. I wasn't even acting in the capacity of a ham. Of course, now, he was teasing me because he saw the antennas on the car, and he and I are acquaintances. I'm not going to say we're close friends, but he was teasing me. He was just making a joke of it, And I thought, that's really horrible, though, that has become part of his humor. That somebody has obviously behaved in such a way. So I just want to say, I think that one of the things that's missing is the fun. The other part is the courtesy, amongst hams. That seems to sometimes be at an all-time low. And I think that hurts the hobby some. I really do. I think especially the like you said, the self-importance of some of the on-air situations that go on that take over good manners and the public floggings and that sort of thing. But now let me ask you this, just, I don't know, do you run into that a little bit on QRZ? Does that present itself as a problem there as well, or is this more of an on-air problem?
Oh yeah, we have all types on QRZ. There are people that will that basically look for times or look for the opportunity to jump in and cause trouble. They take pleasure in causing other people grief just by the use of words. And that's why we have moderators, and we try to keep that curtailed as possible. But it's, I'd say, worse on QRZ than it is on the air, because people seem less afraid. They know the FCC is not going to bust them on QRZ, but we still don't tolerate obscenities or anything like that. But you'll be amazed at how explicit people can be and not use a single dirty word. It's it's a constant job for us. And it's not only just obscene messages and things like that, but just rudeness and people that bait each other, things of that nature. You know, I say it's a problem, but, you know, it's a tremendously small portion of our overall audience, a small portion of our membership. It's the rule that, 2% of the people, cause you 98% of the problem. And, I can't say how grateful I am for all the help that I get on QRZ from both the staff members who are all volunteers and, people that just come along and drop me a note saying, hey, I think this is out of line or someone here is causing a problem. I can't read everything that's on QRZ. There's no way I can do that. And, thanks to, all the good guys out there, that's what really makes it work.
Well, just exactly how many moderators do you have that kind of help you oversee the whole operation?
There's about 10 people, plus a couple of very very gifted administrators that help out a lot too.
Well, that's very, very cool. Yeah, I think with we'll be right back with our special guest Fred Lloyd, AA7BQ. The founder and publisher of QRZ.com, right after this. It operates 20 through 10 meters. It's stealth. It will keep up with any three-element beam and any vertical that you have on your property. But if you can't have a three-element beam or a vertical on your property, you can still have a TW2010. It is stealth. It disappears. We tried to take pictures of it. And we had to move the thing around because it hides so well. There is no compromise in performance with this antenna. And it's portable. You can take it with you on vacation. It's quite unique. They make several flavors of this antenna, however. If you want to operate 80, 40, 60, 30-meter band, it's all there. Go to their website and check it out. TransWorldAntennas.com. That's transworldantennas.com, and check out the special pricing right now.
If you already own a TW2010 Adventurer or Backpacker antenna, and you want to use the antenna on 40 meters, you can get the Transworld Adventurer 4040 Array Box in center section only, right now only $139.95. That puts you on 40 meters, and you're dealing with the exact same antenna structure that has made the TW2010 Transworld Adventurer so famous. The black powder coating, the stealth, the way the antenna is able to hide. And in addition to that, it's portable if you want to take it with you. Of course, you can get it with a deluxe travel bag. It's just fantastic. Go to the website and check it out, transworldantennas.com. That's transworldantennas.com. If you can't remember Transworld Antennas, just remember to go to our website at QSO, tedrandall.com, TEDRANDALL.com, and click on the link for Transworld Antennas. Take a look at this brand new Adventurer 4040.
At QSO, we've got a new prize closet, and we've got some interesting things going into that prize closet. Be sure and write us and send us that email that says, I want to win. Put that in the text somewhere in that email and go to our website, QSOradioshow.com. That's QSOradioshow.com, and send us an email. Tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're listening, how the signal's coming in, or if you're listening by podcast. But be sure and put on that email, I want to win, because we're going to have some really, really neat things to give away. We'll be putting those things up on the website and telling you more about them on the air. Be sure and don't miss out. Send us an email and put in there, I want to win. Go to QSOradioshow.com. That's QSOradioshow.com or TedRandall.com, RANDALL, and we'll look for your email.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, back to our special guest, Fred Lloyd, AA7BQ, the founder and publisher of QRZ.com. The forums there
much like on the air, you know, I really think that if you got a grievance with someone, send them a private email. You know, send them an email. Don't bother the entire group with it. You know, I mean, if somebody really posts something that sticks out, don't you think other people know that? Don't you think that other people reading it can realize that, you know, that whatever that is that's sticking out is out of line, and the person is just probably looking for attention, you know, trying to bait somebody on, and they've got to do it in front of the group because it's look at me, you know, that kind of thing. You know, it just seems like if you have a grievance, I've always been more comfortable sending a private email than I would by answering a post. Matter of fact, I don't think I've ever answered a post except maybe once or twice. And I did that very delicately, and that was only because maybe somebody had put some misinformation up or something on a, and I'm not talking about QRZ, but I'm just talking about online, period. You know, and I don't know. There's been times I've been a little outspoken about things that maybe involve the government, you know, some oppressive side of things that we're all having to put up with. You know, I might make a comment about that, but... my goodness, I guess it goes back to the old rule of religion and politics. You know, if you get into that, you're just asking for trouble. But it's remarkable to me, though. I mean, I see a lot of discussions, and I've went up to the discussion boards, and I've looked at a lot of those things, and I'm amazed at the technical stuff you find up there, where somebody asks a question, and all of a sudden some guy comes out of the woodwork, and man, I mean, he knows all about it, and he within a matter of four sentences, he answers all the questions that the person had. And I think that's really cool because you've got this pool of resources. That's hard to get on the air. I mean, it used to be years ago, it seems like I used to be able to get on a frequency and ask a question about a radio or something, and always somebody would just pop up and say, oh, let me tell you how you do that, you know, and they really knew. It's more difficult today because there's more fragmentation. You know, there's more frequencies. There's little niches of people here and there, not as many large groups as there used to be on ham radio. So QRZ, the forums there, provide you a place where you can actually get with a group of guys of like understanding or whatever. You can ask a question, and chances are within a few days somebody's going to answer that question. Don't you find that to be a real asset?
Absolutely. In fact, our questions and answers forum is one of the most popular ones that we have. And, you know, we have literally thousands of articles, or not really articles, but the postings there and questions. It's really the Elmer's area and an invaluable resource for all of our members.
Why don't you, if you would, kind of acquaint the folks with a few of the features. Maybe there's some new things you've added, but some things that maybe folks are missing when they go to QRZ.
We all know nothing stays a secret for very long on QRZ. Earlier this year, I introduced a new, basically a new set of call sign pages that provide the Google Maps on every call sign. One of the things that's quite nice, really, is when you pull up the map on QRZ, there's a little, right below the map, there's a little link that says Explore on Grid Map. And when you pull that page up, you get a map of your hometown or, you know, right around your TH with a square showing which grid square you're in. And, this particular page, which is what we call the grid mapper, has an option to where if you click on the link that says show hams, it shows you all the hams that are in that particular grid square and the surrounding grid squares as well. And you can pick the squares or type them in. It's truly a unique view of ham radio, and basically, you can look at the entire country with the, you know, with this view, and with a map, you can actually see ham radio is distributed in and around where you live, and in fact any place around the United States, it's very telling. And a very, very interesting part of QRZ. It's called GridMapper. And if you just go to QRZ.com and type in www.qrz.com/GridMapper, one word, you can get a view of all the hams in any grid in the United States, and for outside the United States, at least know for any town, any location on the globe, what the grid square is for that location. So that's a piece that I largely put together myself with some research on the net, and something I'm pretty proud of.
Well, that's very cool. That is really cool. And, of course, there's fellas that almost make a career out of grid chasing, so that would be an interesting thing for them. I'm extremely compelling part of the website. When I said some of the things this folks may be missing, because every once in a while I discover something that's there that I didn't know was there. And I've, you think you've seen the whole site, but in reality, most folks probably haven't seen the entire site. And I guess what I was asking is, what do you think is something that is probably easily missed that people would enjoy?
In the QRZ forums, there's a lot of things going on that don't necessarily come to the forefront. For example, we have a help center, which people are encouraged to go to ask questions about the website, and we actively solicit users to help each other there, and we have a couple of users that have been around for so long, we've given them special privileges so that they can actually help people out with call sign changes and things of that nature. You talk about the QRZ forums, we have the Ham Radio News Forum. We've also got a whole section set aside for contests and de-expeditions. We've got an active HamFest calendar section with over 1,000 listings in there for HamFest. Now, that includes, the listings from the past as well. Our ham radio gear for sale, 71,000 listings in there. 25,000 listings in the trade area. We also have general merchandise where you can sell literally anything. It doesn't matter. We basically allow sales of any type of items in there. As I mentioned before, our questions and answers forum, that's 36,000 articles in there. There's 321,000 replies there. So that kind of says that for every question asked, you get 10 replies. So you'll certainly get an opinion, no matter what you ask in there. An Elmer's Corner, dedicated just to Elmer's and how to become a ham. We have an equipment review section where people submit their thoughts and opinions on equipment. I guess what I'm trying to say here is that our ham radio forums are very large. We have well over 100,000 articles in there and close to 500,000 replies and comments to those articles. So, it's a huge warehouse. And let me say this, everything on QRZ is indexed in Google as well. So if you're looking for a particular subject matter, just go on the left side of the QRZ page, and you'll see a little box there that says Google Search. Fill that in, and you'll have, the best search engine in the world accessing all of those, 500,000 articles. So, that's something that people should know about.
If folks, let's just say a person is a non-ham and they want to log in to QRZ because they're wanting to get their ham license and whatnot, how is that handled? Are they welcomed in without a set of call signs?
Yes, anybody can log in. Anybody can have an account at QRZ. We do restrict write participation. In other words, you can't start an article in some areas unless you have a call sign, but you can read any article, and we certainly welcome everyone. Like I said earlier in the broadcast, our online practice tests have helped thousands of people join the hobby, and it remains a very popular part of the website.
And of course, that includes all classes. In other words, it's the technician, general, and extra. You can go up and study or take mock tests up there. And
that's right.
And see how you do before you face
that's
the
right.
music. Well, I don't want to keep you. I know you've got many things to do, and you've been very kind coming on and talking with us. And if you have anything else, any additional comments, anything that you'd like to say to the listening audience about QRZ or any final comments, go right ahead. The floor is yours.
Okay. Well, thank you, Ted. Well, I want to thank you as well for having me on. I especially want to thank the online ham radio community for helping QRZ become what it is today. Every day I get emails from people encouraging me to keep going, and I will say this right now, QRZ is going to continue indefinitely. As long as I'm able to type, I'm going to keep QRZ running. I especially want to thank those that contribute to the site. I want to thank all of our advertisers and those that sign up and subscribe to our various services. We will, from time to time, introduce new services, and those that are existing customers will certainly be the first to know about that. And all I can say is thanks to everyone for helping keep this going, because what started out as a hobby for me has now become really my entire life. And when I get up in the morning and I look at the TV and it shows all the traffic conditions around town, I just can't be thankful enough that my job is QRZ, and all I have to do is walk down the hall and sit down in front of the computer. And it's one of those jobs where I can't believe that I earn a living from doing it, because really it just is so much fun and so rewarding from everyone. So thank you all. Really appreciate it.
Well, we thank you, sir. It's quite a service to all hams, and to be able to have the actual free service of a call book online and being able to look people up and take tests and read news and posts and all that sort of thing. And of course, it's a vital part of the electronic age, and that's, like I said, it's now woven into the fabric of amateur radio to the point where it's a household name, a household word. And I thank you for your time, and we'll have to have you back again sometime soon.
Okay, Ted, thank you. Appreciate it.
In this day and time, what we don't have much of is time. And if you enjoy operating and you just don't get a chance to, you need to take a look at the Trans World Antennas, TW2010, and all the models that operate the different bands. Go to YouTube and put in Trans World Antennas and see how simple this thing is to set up. I mean, it is easy. It goes together fast. And, of course, that gives you more time to operate. You're not fussing around with an antenna. In an emergency situation, it is absolutely necessary. You need to have one of these, if not for yourself, for your club, or whoever it is that may get called out on a scene where you've got to operate and you've got to be able to set up quickly and efficiently. Go to their website, and that's transworldantennas.com. Transworldantennas.com. There's a link up there to YouTube, and you can see how quickly this antenna sets up, how easy it is to operate. Transworldantennas.com. How many of you would like to operate 80 meters, but you can't because of antenna restrictions? Well, that's over. You can operate 80 meters right now. You can operate from your home, your apartment. You can take it on the road with you. It's the brand new Trans World Antennas 8080. Go to their website and check it out, transworldantennas.com. This is a portable antenna, but it can be a permanent antenna. It's stealth. It's not a low-profile antenna. This thing is a performance-driven piece of engineering. You need to see it. It will be at Dayton, and you need to hear one of these on the air.
If you want to operate 80 meters and you can't, I love the 80-meter band. I can't imagine not being able to operate on 80. But nonetheless, if you're in that position, don't stay in that position. Go to the website and check it out, transworldantennas.com. Go up there and take a look at their brand new 8080 and look for it at Dayton.
Since the beginning of time and across the history of radio broadcasting, there's only one radio station that has ever earned a full-length documentary dedicated totally and completely to its rise to a pinnacle never before achieved by any radio station and its fall. This is a story of what happened when the most legendary programming genius of all time takes the reins of an obscure Canadian radio station in the small city of Windsor, Canada, and creates a radio legend that rocked the Motor City, the USA, and half a continent.
That does it for Big Tom Rivers, 1971, and Hank O'Neill starts a brand new year next at CKLW. For the last time this year, I will say to you, rock on, mother!
Ladies and gentlemen, the beat goes on.
CKLW.
2020 news guys, they were disc jockeys without music. Bum, bum, bum. And everybody knew that something was going to happen. You knew something was going to happen.
Motor City Mayor Roman Gribbs has a mad on for an unidentified rapist, a butcher knife-wielding pervert cornered a secretary in the elevator at Detroit City County Building and rode her to a vacant seventh floor and proceeded to sexually assault her. Guards are now being considered for future surveillance of the crime-stained seventh floor. Lee Marshall, 2020 News.
Now, Markham Street Productions takes you there as you relive the rise and fall of
the Big HCKLW, the Motor City.
You can now own your own copy of this new DVD documentary, Radio Revolution, the Rise and Fall of the Big 8 from Markham Street Productions. The special edition DVD of this award-winning feature-length documentary includes extra scenes, outtakes, photos, and special features. Radio Revolution, the Rise and Fall of the Big 8 is now available for only $29.95 plus shipping. Go to RadioRevolutionDVD.com. That's RadioRevolutionDVD.com. Order now while supply lasts. RadioRevolutionDVD.com. That's RadioRevolutionDVD.com.
And the hits just keep on coming.
CKLW. The Motor City.
Are you needing a place to put up a website? Have you looked around? Do you want to do something that's easy, that's simple, and very, very inexpensive, but yet looks professional? Are you having troubles with your computer? Do you need some tech support help? Are you tired of being connected to India every time you pick up the telephone to get some help on a machine or on a website? The people to call is tux-support.com. That's tux-support.com. T-U-X, like tuxedo, dash support, the word support, .com. These are the people to call. They can get you going. It won't cost you an arm and a leg. You can afford to work with these folks. They're professionals. They answer in plain English, and they can help you do things from a very, very basic, simple standpoint. If you have something that you want to do that's a complex project, well, they can handle that as well. But if you're like I am, when you're trying to put something up on the web or you need help with a computer, you really want somebody that speaks English. And you want it to be simple, and you don't want to have to pay an arm and a leg for it. And you want to deal with some good folks. Go to their website, tux-support.com. That's tux-support.com. At QSO, we've got a new prize closet, and we've got some interesting things going into that prize closet. Be sure and write us and send us that email that says, I want to win. Put that in the text somewhere in that email and go to our website, QSORadioShow.com. That's QSORadioShow.com, and send us an email. Tell us a little bit about yourself,
where you're listening, how the signal's coming in, or if you're listening by podcast. But be sure and put on that email, I want to win, because we're going to have some really, really neat things to give away. We'll be putting those things up on the website and telling you more about them on the air. Be sure and don't miss out. Send us an email and put in there, I want to win. Go to QSORadioshow.com. That's QSORadioshow.com or TedRandall.com, RANDALL, and we'll look for your email. And now, ladies and gentlemen, Cliff, K4VAH, tells the story of his meeting of Senator Barry Goldwater sometime back right here on QSO.
No. I've tried, let me tell you. First of all, I'm an electrical engineer. He is a mechanical engineer. Two engineers get together, particularly father and son. You know, you can lean into each other often to try to make your point. But, no, he's helped me do so much and got me set up. Now, where I am, I'm 68. And ham radio has always been there for me, Ted. And as I tell folks that I meet over time, and I try to encourage them to get into the hobby, I remind them that amateur radio will always be there as a friend. Because no matter what time of day or night or hour or season or location in the world, you can turn on the radio if you have the license and you have the ability with an antenna. You can always call CQ, and most likely someone out there, whoever or whomever, will come back to you. And as you, the neat thing about ham radio operators is that we move with our conversation to the center line of commonality in like hobbies, like interests, or something that you can kind of hook into to have, you know, a positive exchange of verbs, nouns, and pronouns and adjectives on the air. And at least that's what I try to do. But no, ham radio's really been great for me. And I want to give you one more, and this is all I'm going to say about, you know, my personal events. But in the 60s, when I came back from Vietnam, I was in the Washington, D.C. area with my XYL. And I had the opportunity to work a station on Capitol Hill. And I had the opportunity to meet that individual when I was there. And never really expected to ever have the opportunity to come within his presence again, except to watch from afar and watch him on the news and read about him in the papers and the magazines. But that individual was Senator Goldwater. Now, to me, he was General Goldwater. And the Republican individual from the state of Arizona. And he was a man who spoke his mind. And he had a very colorful style of making comments. But in 1987, I went to a one-year study program that was located in Pennsylvania, and the graduation speaker was Senator Goldwater. He had just recovered from his second hip replacement, and you talk about a tough guy. He was gutting it out, still in pain, still recovering, but he said to us privately, a group of hams, there were five of us there, and we came together and made him a certificate. We gave him the Work Doll Award, and we had the title and the name on it. And after our graduation commencement was completed, our schedule was to meet with him, and I would have the opportunity to say hello to him for a second time in a very long time, and really a follow-up in a very long time. And And lo and behold, as I'm going across the stage and being congratulated for the graduation, when I came to him, he looked at me and stepped back, and I won't say exactly the expletive he used. You know, I could say it on the air, and it's probably okay. But I think it's not fitting to say that, because he's just a super guy. But he had a colorful way of phrasing things. And the follow-up was, what are you doing here? So we chatted for probably 20 seconds, 30 seconds, and I said, sir, I've got to let you continue on. Ah, yeah, we can wait. Let's let these folks wait. So I said, sir, we're going to see you in just a little bit, and we're going to give you that award. He said, oh, you're a part of that group. And I said, yes, sir, I am. He said, okay, then. I'll talk to you then. He said, and I understand that you just want to keep the flow going. Well, the commandant of the academy was beside himself. He didn't know what was going on or why, but it was an association that started through the beginning phases of friendship, cemented through amateur radio, and later on was retrieved and enhanced for one more event. For the story I've just told you, we came together afterwards and just had a great old time. And my wife had never met him, and my wife enjoyed meeting him. And he said, come by when you're in Phoenix, come by the house. And, of course, he passed away shortly thereafter. So that was a loss of a super, super advocate for amateur radio. And he did so much. I thanked him years ago for all the phone patches that his station in Phoenix, actually Glendale, and he ran a 24-hour station there, supplemented by Air Force personnel. And they ran phone patches for all the individuals in Vietnam, Thailand, and other areas there. And it was just phenomenal what they did for us. So here again, ham radio and finding a solution to a need. And that's what he did for amateur radio, for me specifically, and a whole bunch of us hams who were there in Vietnam appreciated the fact that his station ran phone patches for us. So, just a super guy. Man, I tell you, got the spot in my heart for that man. The 10 minutes is up. WBAPUM, kilowatt, 4 Victor Alpha Henry.
Kilowatt 4 Victor, play it over the broadcast. Is that all right with you?
Let me get the... I hit the button here as well, just a second. Oh, yeah, I don't mind. You go right ahead. But, hams tend to be long-winded, and I got my Ragtures Award in 1959, so you know exactly how I got it. Go ahead.
Since the beginning of time and across the history of radio broadcasting, there's only one radio station that has ever earned a full-length documentary dedicated totally and completely to its rise to a pinnacle never before achieved by any radio station, and its fall. This is a story of what happened when the most legendary programming genius of all time takes the reins of an obscure Canadian radio station in the small city of Windsor, Canada, and creates a radio legend that rocked the Motor City, the USA, and half a continent.
That does it for Big Tom Rivers, 1971, and Hank O'Neill starts a brand new year next at CKLW. For the last time this year, I will say to you, rock on, mother!
Ladies and gentlemen, the beat goes on.
CKLW.
2020 news guys, they were disc jockeys without music. Bum, bum, bum. And everybody knew that something was going to happen. You knew something was going to happen.
Motor City Mayor Roman Gribbs has a mad on for an unidentified rapist, a butcher knife-wielding pervert cornered a secretary in the elevator at Detroit City County Building and rode her to the vacant seventh floor and proceeded to sexually assault her. Guards are now being considered for future surveillance of the crime-stained seventh floor. Lee Marshall, 2020 News.
Now, Markham Street Productions takes you there as you relive the rise and fall of
the Big HCKLW, the Motor City.
You can now own your own copy of this new DVD documentary, Radio Revolution, the Rise and Fall of the Big 8 from Markham Street Productions. The special edition DVD of this award-winning feature-length documentary includes extra scenes, outtakes, photos, and special features. Radio Revolution, the Rise and Fall of the Big 8 is now available for only $29.95 plus shipping. Go to RadioRevolutionDVD.com. That's RadioRevolutionDVD.com. Order now while supply lasts. RadioRevolutionDVD.com. That's RadioRevolutionDVD.com.
And the hits just keep on coming.
CKLW. The Motor City.
How many of you would like to operate 80 meters, but you can't because of antenna restrictions? Well, that's over. You can operate 80 meters right now. You can operate from your home, your apartment. You can take it on the road with you. It's the brand new Transworld Antennas 8080. Go to their website and check it out, transworldantennas.com. This is a portable antenna, but it can be a permanent antenna. It's stealth. It's not a low-profile antenna. This thing is a performance-driven piece of engineering. You need to see it. It will be at Dayton, and you need to hear one of these on the air. If you want to operate 80 meters and you can't, I love the 80-meter band. I can't imagine not being able to operate on 80. But nonetheless, if you're in that position, don't stay in that position. Go to the website and check it out, transworldantennas.com. Go up there and take a look at their brand new 8080 and look forward to Dayton. At QSO, we've got a new prize closet, and we've got some interesting things going into that prize closet. Be sure and write us and send us that email that says, I want to win. Put that in the text somewhere in that email and go to our website, QSOradioshow.com. That's QSOradioshow.com, and send us an email. Tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're listening, how the signal's coming in, or if you're listening by podcast. But be sure and put on that email, I want to win, because we're going to have some really, really neat things to give away. We'll be putting those things up on the website and telling you more about them on the air. Be sure and don't miss out. Send us an email and put in there, I want to win. Go to QSOradioshow.com. That's QSOradioshow.com or TedRandall.com, RANDALL, and we'll look for your email.
If you like to travel, if you're a camper, if you'd like to take your ham radio hobby with you when you go, you need the Transworld Antennas TW2010L Backpacker Antenna. It's the same exact antenna as the TW2010 Adventurer, with the exception it's been streamlined for the person who likes to camp and travel light. It's the same rugged antenna structure as the TW2010, with the black powder coating and stealth design. We all know the TW2010 is a great permanent or portable antenna, but the TW2010L Backpacker takes portable and emergency operation to an entirely new level. It's especially suited for the amateur operator who loves backpacking, cycling, camping, and makes easy access and quick setup possible for the most extenuating emergencies. TW2010L Backpacker Antenna is available now for a limited time for only $399.95. That's right, $399.95. Pricing includes backpacker, quadra stand, carrying bag, and free shipping in the continental United States through FedEx Ground. That's transworldantennas.com. And now for a limited time, only $399.95. That's transworldantennas.com.
Well, that's going to do it. That's all the time we have for QSO this week. Be sure and join us again next Tuesday for another QSO.